Hare Krishna. So today we'll be beginning our study of Mahaprabhu's teachings to Sanatana Goswami. We're talking about Chaitanya Charitamrita chapters and Vadiya chapters 20 to 24 inclusive. In both Vedic and serious Gaudiya study, there's always a tradition to provide an introduction and an overview before you go into detail. It makes sense to do this because in that way we gain some general knowledge of the field and we also gain some sense of perspective and direction. So it's important that we do that. And if we don't do that, there may well be bewilderment or confusion. For example, we usually think of Sanatana Goswami as the Param Guru of Sambandha Yan. So when we look at these chapters and the contents of these chapters, we may well say, well, I thought Sambandha Yan means my relationship with Krishna. Why is Mahaprabhu talking about the different kinds of avatars? Why is he talking about the material and spiritual worlds? Why is he doing that? So it's a good idea to have an overview and some kind of real understanding of what we're going to be studying. Otherwise, the detail is just information and you really can't do much with it. There's certainly no realization in it. So all this extra information, what we're thinking is extra information, is actually part of Sambandha Gyan. So we'll start by just having a look at that extra information by looking at a chapter overview of 20 to 24. In the 20th chapter, we're looking at the nature and position of the living entities, the many kinds of expansions from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and the nature of his eternal pastimes. In 21, we're looking at his opulence by looking at a description of the spiritual sky and the material world. And we're looking at his sweetness by looking at a description of his all-attractive transcendental form. And in doing that, we're also being given a gift of the intimacy of loving relationship with Krishna by his eternal associates. In the 22nd chapter, the process of pure devotional service, what it is, what it's not. 23rd, life's ultimate goal, love of Godhead. And it's very interesting here because usually when you ask people what their goal is, they say, my goal is Krishna Prem. But you press a little further and say, well, what does that mean to you? Well, you know, love of Godhead. But actually, love of Godhead is a beginning point. Without the, that love is mixed with the sthayi bhava of the devotee, the different elements of rasa, you don't actually develop a true loving relationship with Krishna. There are actually just 9 different levels of prem, according to, you know, like what your rasa is with Krishna. So just to say, I want to love Krishna, is not really enough. It's a very superficial understanding. We really have to get into what it means in a deeper sense. And the text 4 of 23 makes that very clear. Where Mahaprabhu says, when affection for Krishna becomes deeper, one attains love of Godhead in devotional service. Such a position is called sthayi bhava, permanent enjoyment of the mellows of devotional service to Krishna. So with understanding that this sthayi bhava, it means we're fixed in our relationship with Krishna. We know our rasa, we know our identity, we know our service, we know all of these things. So, you know, this is the essence of the thing. You know, we talk about love, love, love very freely. It's not enough to love Krishna. The heart has to be evolved to the point where we actually know who we are in relation to Krishna. What is the nature of our loving relationship with Krishna? And Mahaprabhu, in chapter 23, explains this stage of sthayi bhava and the evolutionary preceding stages. And he also talks about the confidential nature of rasa. Because when you have this kind of relationship in devotional service with Krishna, there's a taste. And that taste is what is going to be pushing you forward in that relationship. And then in 24, chapter 24, we have the explanations of the Atmaramabha, 61 of them, as well as something of the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. And also Mahaprabhu gives Sanatana Goswami an overview, or like an outline, a Hari Bhakti Vilas, what he wants him to actually put in that book. So it's quite a lot, quite an expansive subject matter that we're going to be looking at over the next 3 months. And it's interesting because in these teachings, what Mahaprabhu is teaching is not actually just some mandigyan. What he's teaching is the fundamental truths of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So when we're looking at the end, these are actually, this is explained. This point is made by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Dasamala Nyasa. He makes this point very clearly, that when Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita is speaking to Rupa Goswami, is speaking to Sanatana Goswami and other great souls, he's in effect teaching them the fundamental principles. Now we have to remember that what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls the Das Mula, what Mahaprabhu is in effect doing, he's taking the Navaprameya of Madhvacharya, the 9 essential truths of Madhvacharya, as his basis. We'll go into that a bit later. But there are 2 essential aspects of Mahaprabhu's teachings that are only hinted at very slightly in Madhva's teachings. One is Chinchalita Tattva, and the other is Rasa Tattva. Krishna's the source of all mellows. So these 2 you don't find in Madhvacharya. You will find them very strongly in the teachings of Mahaprabhu. So to really understand what we're going to be looking at, we have to have some kind of understanding of the Dasamula. And it's very interesting when you study Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works, because we find, and his life, because we find that he was very insistent that his Namhat devotees, they had to know Dasamula before they could take Diksha. He actually claimed that you could not chant offenselessly unless you had a good grounding in Dasamula. And in conclusion to Dasamula Nyas, he says that if this is actually implemented, that no devotee can take Diksha before having a proper grounding in Dasamula Tattva, then nobody will be able to blemish or destroy the prestige of Mahaprabhu's mission. Because if you understand these teachings, you will not be in an exploitative mentality. You will not be in an offensive mentality if you've imbibed these teachings. What dimensions sin? When you know, when you have an overall picture of how this material universe works, your role in it, you're in a lot safer ground. So I wanted to have a look at this. Today we won't chant it. From next week we'll chant it every week, together with another little session that I want to share with you. But this is just the Mula Sutra from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Das Mula Tattva. Very small book, but important book. Now, this looks, it's very important you pick up on what he's saying here, because quite often, because we're so much bombarded with information, it's all about information, we don't really contemplate what is being said, and we don't get the full benefit of it. So just a few things I want to take from the verse. The first word, this is crucial. At this stage of our evolution as individuals and as a member of Prabhupada's mission, Amnaya. Now if you look at Pramana, the first point down, you'll find the teachings of the Vedas received through Guru Parampara as, are known as Amnaya. So not that you can go to Rasa Vihari or this Babaji or that Babaji and collect some information, expect that you're going to understand what Krishna and Mahaprabhu are giving. Amnaya is a very popular phrase in Vrindavan these days, and it's very deceptive and unpleasant, but very common. And that phrase is, if you have an open heart and an open mind, there's so much you can learn in Vrindavan. But the point is that while we have respect for everyone, we have an allegiance to a particular parampara. We are connected to a particular parampara. And this is our lifeline. So Amnaya, such an important concept. Most devotees, if you ask them what's Amnaya, they probably think it's a competitor to Amol.
To?
Amol Bata. You know, they don't have any concept. Amnaya, what it means. But what we're looking at here, Veda by itself, what is the substance of that? It's only when it's coming down in parampara that it has substance, unbroken chain. And also, in the number one, the infallible evidence of the Vedas. Also important to remember that the Veda is only infallible when it is handed down in unbroken parampara. If it's not handed down in that way, you don't have infallible, you have upper sampradaya. So these are just little things that we should be very, very aware of because they're important. And also we find in the same first section, the infallible evidence of the Vedas of the Smriti Shastras headed by Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as evidence such as direct sense perception, pratyaksha, conferred with the guidance of the Vedas, are all accepted as praman, evidence. Now, another thing we have to be aware of here, that the pratyaksha here, we're not talking about the layman's pratyaksha, the common person's pratyaksha. We're talking about the sense perception of Guru and the sadhus. Prabhupada was constantly commenting on things he saw around him. And we can learn so much from that. But if we were to comment on what we saw around us, it would be so valuable. So we have to, you know, that's another important point. And then 3 and 8, these are the two that are unique to Mahaprabhu's teachings. Sabashakiman, Krishna is the possessor of all potent, sorry, 4, Akhila Rasa Mrita Sindhu is the ocean of nectarian mellows, and 5, Achinchabeda Veda Tarka. The entire universe consisting of the conscious chit and unconscious achit is Sri Hari's Achinchabeda Veda Prakash. That is to say, it is his manifestation which is inconceivably both different and non-different from him. Now this teaching of Mahaprabhu has incredible ramifications. We could actually give quite a few sessions just on this. But one thing that I'd like to bring your attention to at this point in time is that without this understanding of Achinchabeda Veda Tattva, we cannot understand actually how Krishna expands in all these different forms. We can't understand how we can see Krishna in the material energy. We can't do any of these things. So then you have the position of the Sahajas and the Prakritas. For them, Krishna's up there, and what I do down here doesn't really matter. Yeah? But when you have the understanding that everything is an expansion of Krishna's energies, everything is expansion from him. It's not separate from Krishna. It's separated from him. It's separated from him, but it is not separate from him. It's part and parcel of Krishna. So there's one little story that Prabhupada, when he was in his room on the second floor of the Lotus Building in Mayapur, he was meeting with a few devotees there. And Sadananda Prabhu, he came in to give Prabhupada a message. And on his way out, he accidentally slammed the door. And Prabhupada called him back. And he said, pure devotees don't slam doors. Now that's a very deep statement. Because what he's actually saying is that the pure devotee knows how to interact with Krishna's energies. He's not going to act inappropriately. So, you know, all of this is coming from the Sachinchamita Bhedatattva. If we're in the black and white of material and spiritual, we miss out on this. We can't, our hearts cannot actually refine and deepen without this concept. Any questions on that before we move on? Was it pretty clear? I want you to keep hold of this sheet because as we're going through the teachings, we're going to be seeing how all of this is manifesting in Mahaprabhu's work. Any questions? Yeah.
You said pratyaksha means sense perception of Sri Guru and the sadhus. So here, how do we define sadhu?
There are many ways that you can define it. We have to find that person. My favorite is sadhu is one who increases your faith in Guru. So what we're looking at is those who are in tune with Shastra, in tune with Guru, not acting independently. Sometimes we fall into the illusion of thinking that sadhu is someone who knows more than me, someone who chants more rounds than me, someone who's more austere than me. We think like that. But actually, to be sadhu, we're talking basically majjham majjham. We're talking someone who has a sensitivity of heart and a sensibility of heart to understand what you need to hear when.
Yes.
It's a very important thing because people tend, you know, if people are on the egoistical platform and are not fixed in, and this is a very interesting point that we'll look at a bit later, if we're not fixed in the understanding that I am servant of Guru and Gauranga, then we can take on many parties. I'm a learned scholar. I'm an advanced devotee. Like that. And when we're in that mood, we're very dangerous. Because we want to tell people what we know. But this is not what an advanced soul will do. An advanced person will tell you what you need to hear. It's a big difference. You know, you may know so much, but you know, when a child asks you a question, and somebody doing physics, university level, you're going to explain the same mathematical principles. In essence, they'll be the same. You're not going to lie to the child. In essence, you're going to give them the same. But the point is that you have to be able to, this is a very important, this discretion is very, very important. And we can do a lot of harm to devotees. And it's actually an offense to the Holy Name. We're doing an offense to ourselves. To preach to the faithless also means to preach to people above their level of realization, above their level of faith. So that means that you have to know who you're talking to. Not that it's just somebody that you unload a whole lot of information onto. You know who you're talking to. And, you know, you deal with that circumstance in a responsible way. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, Yamataji, I was just trying to understand the connection between the Praman and the Amneya. So.
Okay. Praman, sometimes if you're looking at the lexicographers, they'll translate it as evidence. But it's more than evidence. What we're meaning is the absolute truth. So the Praman, that's the teaching of the Vedas received through Guru Parampara, I'm known as Amnaya. So you can't really, I guess, in one sense separate them. If you want absolute, you're talking Veda. If you're talking Veda, you can't separate it from someone qualified to give it to you. Like that.
Yeah, so
it's a working principle.
So both together.
Yeah.
So the Vedic knowledge coming through the
Parampara. That's called Amnaya.
That is Amnaya.
Yeah.
And that can only, that is the evidential truth.
Yeah.
So it's not in, not any statement of Vedas. It is through coming through.
Yeah.
So then.
Yes, you see, basically what you've got, if you just take Veda as it stands, sacred literature. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it can be abused.
Yeah.
There's so much of it.
Yes.
There's so much mistranslation. You just have to look at America before Prabhupada came to the States. There are over 700 translations of Bhagavad Gita. But no devotees. This is what happens when Veda is not handed down from Quran. You have the information, but you don't have the transformational potency. When you have Parampara, you have transformational potency. That information can transform you. And that's what we want. That's what Bhagavatam is about. Revolution. Bhagavatam is about revolution in the hearts of those who are living in a misdirected civilization. Yeah? Yeah.
Can we understand it in this way, that Vedas are vast?
Mm-hmm.
And like even Krishna says, the flowery language of Vedas. So
right.
When it comes in Guru Parampara, they know what to give you.
Right.
So they pick and pass it on.
Yeah.
Because on our own, we won't know where to look in Vedas and what for what.
Also, that's true, and it's also a historical perspective that different ages will mean different emphasis. So that the Veda is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
But the emphasis in different ages will be there. So who's to judge that?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on that? Now, this one thing, this is basically giving you a framework about equally important to understanding the framework or the fundamental truths of Mahaprabhu's teachings is to understand the heart of them. Did we give that one out?
No.
Oh, okay. So this, I've just taken verses directly from CC, from the words of Mahaprabhu, and just to make it, because there's so much misunderstanding of basic concepts that Mahaprabhu has given, and we really can't afford to fall into illusion if we don't want to waste this human form of life. So here, this one also from next week, we'll be chanting together at the beginning of the class. Today there's a lot I want to cover, so we won't do that. We'll just read the heading and then the verses. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan, understanding the heart of the matter. The Vedic literatures give information about the living entity's eternal relationship with Krishna, which is called Sambandha. The living entity's understanding of this relationship and his acting accordingly is called Abhideya. This is very essential, it's crucial that you understand this definition of Abhideya. If you are not understanding your relationship with Guru and Gauranga, how is your behavior going to have any value? It's not going to be on track. You can be doing the most wonderful work in the wrong consciousness and the result will not be profitable. It will not give you any realization. Maybe a bit of reputation, but no realization. So what is the value of it? So you have to think about it. When you're doing your what you call your devotional service, are you doing it in understanding of your relationship with Krishna? I am Krishna's eternal servant. I'll give you a little exercise to do tomorrow. From 9 o'clock tomorrow, just until 10 o'clock, from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, you watch your speech and you watch your behavior and see how much of it is telling the world that I'm the eternal servant of Guru Angaranga, and how much of it is telling the world I'm the enjoying controller of all I survey. It'll be an eye-opener. It's important to do these little exercises, because otherwise we can really get lost. But can you see how this is crucial? Because most people, they think of Abhideya as process. They equate the two words. But it's not the fact. The fact is that the living entity's understanding of this relationship of servitude with Krishna and is acting accordingly. You understand your relationship, you have some small realization of it, and you're acting according to that relationship. That's something special to think about. Returning home back to Godhead is the ultimate goal of life and is called prayojan. Now, prayojan is a very interesting word because it can be goal, but it also means need, our ultimate need. We think we have so many needs, but the ultimate need is to get out of this madhouse and join a transcendental realm of loving relationship with Krishna. Devotional service or sense activity for the satisfaction of the Lord. This is another amazing definition of devotional service. Just to check whether you're on track or not. Devotional service, sense activity for the satisfaction of the Lord, is what you're doing pleasing to the senses of Krishna. Pleasing to his mind, pleasing to his heart. Devotional service or sense activity for the satisfaction of the Lord is called Abhideya, because it can develop one's original love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal of life. This goal is the living entity's topmost interest and greatest wealth. Thus one attains the platform of transcendental loving service unto the Lord. So you can see that these two are pretty much tied together. Developing Krishna prema and going back. It's a prerequisite. No entrance into the lok without the ticket. Krishna prema has to be there. When one attains the transcendental bliss of an intimate relationship with Krishna, he renders service to him and tastes the mellows of Krishna consciousness. So this is coming from an activated heart. I have a relationship with Krishna. It's evolved because of my contact with him, which is factual, because he is Satchidananda. I'm feeling that Ananda. I'm getting a taste of my constitutional position as Satchidananda. So then, when I feel that, my natural response is that I want to serve him. All of my senses, my very being, wants to serve him. And by that depth of heart, that awakened heart is very deep, the service is very focused. When we value something, we're attentive, we're careful. So when that is there, then what will result from that is that we can taste the mellows of Krishna consciousness. Some people say, why aren't I getting any taste? Here's your answer. Not a cheap thing. We always have to remember that anatta nivritti and nista come before ruchi. So if you're asking, why aren't I getting any taste, then maybe you have a look at what anattas are there that are blocking you. Where aren't I not steady? My devotional practices. Like that? Yeah? And the last one is more or less a sutra. In the Vedic literatures, Krishna is a central point of attraction, and his service is our activity. to attain the platform of love of Krishna is life's ultimate goal. Therefore, Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna are the three great riches of life. So beautiful this verse. Krishna, Krishna, Bhakti, Prem, Tina, Mahadan. Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna. These are the three great riches of life. Okay. Any questions on that before we move on? Yeah.
Mataji, in the first verse, Abhide, the living entity's understanding of this relationship and his acting accordingly is called Abhide. So now, I'm just thinking of position that, okay, while you understand, but there's no realization in this. So, but still we do the service to the Krishna. So this Abhide itself will give the deeper understanding, or how?
There has to be a conscious effort. Not that we just do the activity. We have to be consciously endeavoring. We have to be consciously endeavoring. This is important. And we see from Mahaprabhu's associates that there's no excuse. There's no excuse. No, well, I'm working in the workforce, I can't do this. I'm a housewife, I can't do this. No, we've seen so many evidences, so many associates of Mahaprabhu. Ramananda Roy. He's in government service. Look at his position, how evolved he was in his position. Shivananda Sen, Vedacharya, Sridharani, Malini Devi, Madhavi Devi. All in very, very different. This is the beauty of reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat. So many amazing associates of Mahaprabhu. They're situated in so many different ashrams and varnas. You know, so you can learn. You know, it's all encompassing. Krishna consciousness is all encompassing. So getting back to your point, the thing is that, not that, okay, I'm not really evolved in my understanding, so I'll just do the thing. Not good enough. It's good, as I've said many times, if we have kislokas that become our daily companions. One of them we know very well. Chaitanya Das Mui, Chaitanya Das, Chaitanya Das Mui, Tarnatasiratas. So we pick up these verses, any verses that we find and inspire us, and we use them as keys. Yeah. Everything has to be a conscious act. Conscious. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so now let's begin our exploration of Mahaprabhu's teachings through Sanatana Goswami. I want to do that by having a look at verses 98 to 103. Now we're wasting our time studying these teachings if we don't have this mood of deep humility and surrender.
98.
We'll start with 98.
Chapter
20. Yeah. Because here, Sanatana Goswami is setting the mood for factually entering into these esoteric transcendental teachings. If we want transformation and realization from our study, then this has to be our mood. It's the mood of a receiver, not the mood of an achiever. Receiving, we're depending on mercy, by mercy coming down from those who know that we will achieve, we will come to understand. Not that I will achieve, I will do. This doesn't have a place in studying Shastra. It's all by revelation, if it's real. Okay, so let's have a look at this 98. Putting a straw in his mouth and bowing down, Sanatana Goswami clasped the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and humbly spoke as follows. Now, quite often in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find this phrase, putting a straw in his mouth. Now, it's very important that we understand the significance of this. In Manusmita, it explains that the most heinous act is that you've given shelter to a cow, and because of your negligence, that cow has died. It's the most heinous act. Now, the way that you have to atone for that, you have to sleep in the Goshala for a certain specific time, and you can only live by begging. And when you go out begging, you put a straw between your teeth. That indicates that to those that know that you're a cow killer. It also means that you can't speak to explain your position or defend yourself. So you're going out to beg for your meal. Everybody knows what you are. You can't explain yourself. How would you feel?
Humbled.
More than humbled, devastated. Really bring you down to size. Yeah? So this is what we're looking at here. This is how he's feeling. And in effect, he has been associating with calculus. He's been associating with cow meat eaters. So obviously, you know, he's aware, and he's a conscious soul. He's aware that, oh, I've really made a mess of things. Yeah? Putting a straw in his mouth and bowing down, Sanatana Goswami class saluted Sri Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and humbly spoke as follows. Sanatana Goswami said, I was born in a low family, and my associates are all low class men. I myself am fallen and am the lowest of men. Indeed, I have passed my whole life fallen in a well of sinful materialism. I do not know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental. Nonetheless, in ordinary dealings, people consider me a learned scholar, and I am also thinking of myself as such. Out of your causeless mercy, you have delivered me from the materialistic path. Now, by that same causeless mercy, please tell me what my duty is. Who am I? Why do the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Actually, I do not know how to inquire about the goal of life and the process for attaining it. Please be merciful upon me. Please explain all these truths. Now, it's very, you know, we become very complacent when we've been in devotional service for some time because we're not involved in so much sinful activity. Our environment's pretty peaceful, generally speaking. And we become complacent. We start to think, I know it. Very dangerous. I want to tell you a little story. It's a very sweet experience to make this point clear, that actually we always have to remember that Krishna and all his energies are unlimited and ever expanding. So however much you know, there's always another angle on it. There is always another angle on it. You know something. But then Krishna at every minute, every second, is expanding. Do you know all the letters? What's that? Do you know? So I had an experience that brought this home. It was actually a very wonderful, it was a very sweet experience and a very humbling experience, and it really deepened my relationship with Prabhupada. It was a very special thing that happened. So some months ago, I was studying Bhagavatam 10.21, the Gopis glorify Krishna's flute. It's generally known as Vena Gita. And whenever I do this kind of study, it's usually by hearing and chanting, primarily by hearing and chanting, and I always include Prabhupada's Krishna book, because there's always so many nuances there that are very, very special and unique to Prabhupada. So in the fifth verse, Krishna is described as wearing a Vaijanti mala. So in the Bhagavatam, the BBT translators, they translate that as Vaijanti garland. But Prabhupada in Krishna book, he translates it as Vajanti necklace. So I thought I knew everything, right? So every time I read that, and I was reading it to Thakurji, every time I read that, I would wince. There's this whole little drama going on in my head. Prabhupada, why did you use the word necklace? It's another excuse for the critics to point a finger at you and you know, point out your limitations. Why did you use the word necklace? And this went on for some months. Every time I saw the word necklace, Prabhupada, why did you use the word necklace? So then, one fine day, some friends came to visit me. I said, Mataji, we bought a gift for Thakurji. What did you bring? Something special? Very, very special, Mataji. And they held out this special gift. I said, what's that? They said, it's a Vajanti necklace. Vajanti necklace is made from the seeds of the Vajanti tree. In the time of Krishna, all over Vrindavan and still all over Nandagana and Vashanam, you'll find Vajanti trees. So Prabhupada knew what he was talking about. He was being very specific. He wasn't wearing a garland of five different flowers. He was wearing a Vajanti necklace. You see? So we come in with the edge that I know it all. Better we have an open heart. I don't know anything, Prabhupada. I'm coming to your books as a fool. Please explain to me. And then we have some hope of actually entering into a proper understanding of what life's about. So let's read these verses again, but this time with a bit more heart. 98. Putting a straw in his mouth and bowing down, Sanatana Goswami clasped the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and humbly spoke as follows. Sanatana Goswami said, I was born in a low family and my associates are all low class men. I myself am fallen and am the lowest of men. Indeed, I have passed my whole life fallen in a well of sinful materialism. Okay, now this purport of Prabhupada is very, very important because our reaction to this may be he's just being humble. Actually, he's a Saraswati Brahman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Prabhupada's purport is very interesting. Actually, Srila Sanatana Goswami belonged to a Brahman family because he belonged to the Saraswati division of the Brahmanism and was well-cultured and well-educated. Somehow or other, he accepted a ministership in the Muslim government. Therefore, he had to associate with meat-eaters, drunkards, and gross materialists. Sanatana Goswami considered himself fallen, for in the association of such men, he also fell victim to material enjoyment. Having passed his life in that way, he considered that he had wasted his valuable time. This statement is about how one can become fallen in this material world. Is made by the greatest authority in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Actually, the whole world has presently fallen into material existence. Everyone is a meat-eater, drunkard, woman-hunter, gambler, and whatnot. People are enjoying material life by committing the four basic sins. Although they are fallen, if they simply submit themselves at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will be saved from sinful reaction. So it's very powerful because he's explaining that it's by association that we can degrade so easily. So how careful we should be of our association. And then even if we are degraded, and let's face it, most of us are in this age, then simply by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu and his teachings, we, like Sanatana, can be saved from this hideous circumstance. I do not know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental. Importantly, understand this statement. Why? Why don't I know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental? Because in our conditioned state, we're on the mental platform. Mental platform is accepting and rejecting. And it's accepting and rejecting according to our past experience. Last time I did this, it was very painful, so this time I won't do it again. Isn't it? But quite often that's not what happens, because it's all related, karmically related. So when we're on the mental platform, we cannot actually, because we've given power of attorney to the mind. What does the mind know? It's controlled by the senses. So the senses are pushing the mind around, the mind is pushing us around, and we think we're advancing. So we don't know what is beneficial, what is detrimental. And this is why it is so important to have instruction of Guru, Shastra and Sadhu. Because the mind is a mad monster. It's dragging you all over the place. But when we have this instruction of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, it's like something you can hold on to. If you're in a strong storm, Michael, you have very strong winds. They can blow you away. But if you can hold on to something, you don't get blown away. So in the same way, when we realize the importance of the instruction of Sadhu, Guru and Shastra, we hold on to it. Mind is kicking. Mind is screaming. No, Guru said do this. Then slowly, by following that way of behavior, we can free ourselves from the grip of the mind. By mercy of Guru Varanga, we can free ourselves from the grip of the mind. So we don't know what is beneficial. We don't know what is detrimental. We haven't got a clue. Nonetheless, in ordinary dealings, people consider me a learned scholar, and I also think of myself as such. This is something else we have to deal with a lot. Not only do we impose the parties on ourselves, I'm a this, I'm a that, but other people impose the parties on us. So then you get to the point of, well, this one thinks I'm her daughter, and this one thinks I'm her mother, and this one thinks I'm the wife, and this one thinks I'm the, what am I? Who am I? It's not only the aparties that we put on ourselves, it's the aparties that people put on us. So we have to be very careful, very conscious of what's happening here. Is this actually helping me? The way people are seeing me? And we have to protect ourselves. One major thing we have to protect ourselves from, this much more than anybody else, you're a realized soul and everybody worships you and calls you Guru. How dangerous that is for you. How dangerous that is for you. I'm not Guru. I'm not advanced devotee. I'm an insignificant servant of Guru Varanga. Only that position is safe. The others are going to pull you away from being that insignificant servant of Guru Varanga. You become attached to the upadhi of being Guru, attached to the upadhi of being advanced devotee, not long before you're going to have major problems. Only one identity. Insignificant servant of Guru Varanga. Then we have some chance of advancement. Out of your causeless mercy you have delivered me from the materialistic paths. Now by the same causeless mercy, please tell me what my duty is. Now in India it's very, very popular. People go to sadhus to touch their feet or get their blessings. Very, very popular. Everybody goes to a sadhu for this. But here's Natan Goswami saying, okay, main thing is instruct me. Instruct me. Now by the same causeless mercy, please tell me what my duty is. Yeah. All the rest is peripheral. It's actually part of cheating religion. It's got nothing to do with Bhagavad Dhamma. Who am I? Why do threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Actually, I do not know how to inquire about the goal of life and the process for attaining it. Being merciful upon me, please explain all these truths. Let's read the introduction to Prabhupada's introduction to this chapter. Let's get a general feel for what we're going to be looking at. The following summary study of this chapter is given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Pravaha Vasya. When Srila Sanatana Goswami was imprisoned by Nawab Hasan Sah, he received news from Rupa Goswami that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone to Mathura. Sanatana Goswami thereafter satisfied the superintendent of the jail by sweet solicitations and bribery. After giving the jailer 7,000 gold coins, Sanatana Goswami was released. He then crossed the Ganges and fled. One of his servants, Ishan, followed him, carrying 8 gold coins. Sanatana Goswami and his servant then spent the night in a small hotel on the way to Benares, or Varanasi. The hotel owner knew that Sanatana Goswami and his servant had 8 gold coins, and he decided to kill them and take the money. Making plans in this way, the hotel owner received them as honorable guests. Sanatana Goswami, however, asked his servant how much money he had, and taking 7 of the gold coins, Sanatana offered them to the hotel owner. Thus the owner helped them reach the hilly track towards Varanasi. On the way, Sanatana Goswami met his brother-in-law, Shrikanta, at Hajipur, and Shrikanta helped him after he had heard about all Sanatana's troubles. Thus Sanatana Goswami finally arrived at Varanasi and stood before the door of Chandrasekhara. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him in and ordered him to change his dress so that he could look like a gentleman. For his garment, he used an old cloth of tapan mishras. Later, he exchanged his valuable blanket for a torn quilt. At this time, Mahaprabhu was very pleased with him, and thus Sri Sanatana Goswami received knowledge of the absolute truth from the Lord himself. First, they discussed the constitutional position of the living entities, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami how the living entity is one of Lord Krishna's energies. After this, the Lord explained the way of devotional service. While discussing the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, the Lord analyzed Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, as well as the expansions of the Lord called Svayam Rupa, Tadikatma, and Avesh, which are divided into various branches known as Vaibhav and Prabhav. Thus the Lord described the many forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also described the incarnations of God within the material world, incarnations such as Purusha avatars, Manvantara avatars, Guna avatars, Shaktivesha avatars. The Lord also discussed the divisions of Krishna's different ages, such as Balya and Purganda, and the different pastimes of the different ages. He explained how Krishna attained his permanent form when he reached youth. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained and described everything to Sanatana Goswami. Now, one thing that's very interesting, some may question why it's there, but if you're a little contemplative, you'll understand. It's interesting that Sanatana Goswami faced so many challenges before he met Mahaprabhu. Actually, 25% or more than 100 verses of this chapter are giving nitty-gritty detail of the difficulties Sanatana Goswami faced. It's interesting. Now, why is Krishnadas Kaviraj giving so much detail? Isn't truth spoken concisely through eloquence? Why so much detail? Why is he giving so much detail? I want to backtrack. To understand this, we backtrack to Madhya 1. Madhya 1, very interesting. Mahaprabhu meets Rupa Sanatan in Ramkeli. There, he initiates them both. He places his hand, this is the Supreme Personality of God, it's Svayam Bhagavan Gaur we're talking about. He initiates them, he places his hands on their heads. They place his feet on their heads. He embraces them. He tells all his associates, who just happen to include Chinachinandaram, Haridas Thakur, the stalwarts. He asks, Mahaprabhu asks these great souls, you please bless these two. And these two touch all their feet. And all of these great souls don't complain. They're happy to serve Mahaprabhu by blessing these two. So much mercy. So much conscious mercy. So how come so much trouble? Now this is a very important part of Sambandhagyan. If we don't get this right, we're going to stay on the surface for a long time. Often, when we sincerely desire and attempt to surrender to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga, we think, okay, now life will be a lot easier. I surrender to Krishna. He'll take care of things. He'll take care of me. And he does. But life does not get easier. Life gets tougher. Interesting to understand why that's happening. Such is the nature of waking up to the dangers of floating downstream and then trying to swim upstream. Life is a breeze when you're flowing with the current. But that's the current of degradation. All of Kali Yuga, not to speak of material existence, Kali Yuga in particular, is a current of degradation. Easy to flow with it. You try swimming against that current. Now the interesting thing is that swimming against it, that current, gives you muscle. If you're taking shelter appropriately, you're swimming appropriately with proper consciousness, that swim will give you muscle. It won't be such a hard work after some time. Okay, so it does get tougher, and you'll find that with Sanatana Goswami, not only does he have a number of serious tests and difficulties before he meets Mahaprabhu, but he has some throughout his devotional career. So many tests, so many difficulties he faces. He's thinking he would commit suicide, throw himself on the Jagannath's coat. Mahaprabhu calls him to prasadam. Quickest way is to go, past the temple. All these are tests by Mahaprabhu. Why that is so is very intriguing. Explained by Srila Prabhupada in the letter in 67. We won't get onto that today. But it's interesting. So all of these things are basically what we're looking at here. If we're in good association, if we're taking shelter of Guru and Gauranga in the process they're giving, then these little challenges are going to strengthen our faith muscles. If we don't have good association, if we're not following appropriately, it's going to break our faith. Everything rests in association, proper association, and because you find so many challenges, the mind can become bewildered so easily. How many times, even in a day, do we think, what am I supposed to do now? Yes. So many challenges, isn't it? So, it's interesting. And there's a verse, Bhagavatam 11.14.21, but it's Uddhava Gita, when Krishna says to Uddhava, I am attained through unflinching faith and devotional service. Now sometimes we fall into the illusion that I'm going to attain Krishna and love for Krishna just by doing my devotional service. It's not just by doing devotional service. It's by developing unflinching faith. So when do we flinch? We flinch when we're in a fearful circumstance, an unknown circumstance, a painful circumstance, a threatening circumstance, we flinch. It's natural. It's natural to react that way. But then the unflinching aspect comes in. Despite flinching like that, we go on with our service. Beautiful example, Prabhupada was giving a lecture on Bhagavad Gita in the States, and there was an Indian gentleman who thought he knew everything in the audience. And when Prabhupada finished the lecture, he'd been glorifying Arjuna's position and, you know, talking about the battle and that sort of thing. And so when Prabhupada finished the lecture, the gentleman is quite, he was a gentleman, he just stood up and said to Prabhupada, "I don't understand why you're glorifying Arjuna. If he was transcendental, why did he cry when his son was killed? Where's the transcendence in that?" And Prabhupada's answer was very illuminating. He said, "It's human, it's natural to cry in such a circumstance. But the transcendence lies in the fact that despite that circumstance, despite that agony of heart, he went back to the battlefield." So not that we don't feel. If we don't have emotions, how can we develop love of Godhead? Love means emotions. So we don't want the heart to become stone hard in its attempt to cope with material existence and the trials and struggles. We don't want to cope with it by becoming hard. We want to cope with it by becoming fish. We can, you know, we can become stone or we can become fish. So when you drop a stone into Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it just sinks to the bottom. But when you throw a fish, it will swim in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Now the fish is interesting because to become a fish, at the moment we are stone. We have to understand what stone means. Stone means I know who I am, I know what I want, I know how I'm going to get it. Fix, fix, fix. Rigid. Rigid. What does that have to do with surrender? What does that have to do with Shikshastika 8? When we can go into the circumstance, we're doing our service, so many obstacles come. Instead of it's my way or the highway, get out of the way. You know, instead of that, if it's okay, we go into that circumstance, we see the mess that we have to deal with. Our first thought should be, I need to take shelter. Gurudev, Prabhupada, Krishna, what am I supposed to do now? What am I supposed to learn from this? We have to become conscious cooperators. We have to give up this idea that we are the controllers. We can't control our blinking. But not anything else. We try. We put on a farce, a drama, soap opera. But it's got nothing to do with reality. Wonderful example of how useless that is and how wonderful it is to take shelter is in the pastime of Ambarish and Vivasa Muni. It makes it so clear. Who you want to line up with? Ambarish or Vivasa Muni? If you've got a brain, who are you going to line up with? Who?
Ambarish.
Ambarish, of course. Okay. So, in catching the point, so it's so important that this strengthening of the muscles, and Prabhupada, he really says it in a nutshell, it's in the introduction to his Bhagavad Gita. Really amazing. This is one of my main keys for growing old. I'm trying to be Krishna conscious. It is really something. Krishna tells Arjuna that if he doesn't practice remembering Krishna while he is struggling for existence, then it will not be possible for him to remember Krishna at the time of death. Lord Chaitanya also advises this. He says that one should practice remembering the Lord by chanting the name of the Lord always. The names of the Lord are none different. So Lord Krishna's instruction to Arjuna to remember me and Lord Chaitanya's instruction to always chant the names of the Lord Krishna are the same instruction. There is no difference because Krishna and Krishna's name are none different. Therefore, we have to practice remembering the Lord always, 24 hours a day, by chanting His names and molding our lives in such a way that we can remember Him always. It's so beautiful. Struggle for existence. If when there's a struggle in your life, and this is what we do, there's a difficulty comes into our life, we put everything aside. I have to deal with the problem. Everything else aside. I'll deal with the problem. No, no. The difficulty has come into your life to give you a chance to strengthen your faith muscles, to strengthen your devotional muscles. We always have to remember the prema, what is it? It's 100% shraddha. Prema is nothing but 100% shraddha. So every difficulty that comes into our life, if we have the proper mood towards that difficulty, if we're thinking, I want to be a conscious cooperator, I want to be an instrument according to Guru Gauranga's plan in this circumstance. I don't want to have an independent role. I want to move, speak, and think as they want me to move, think, and speak in this circumstance. Isn't that a safer position? So that is not that we think, oh yes, that's very nice, but so that's over there. Maybe it is over there right now, but the point is we start where we're at and we move towards it. And Prabhupada is saying it here. Krishna tells Arjuna that if he doesn't practice remembering Krishna while he is struggling for existence, then it will not be possible for him to remember Krishna at the time of death. You practice now. Old age is such a blessing. It's practice time. It's practice time. Serious practice time. Yeah? How are you going?
Am I too
heavy for you? Yeah.
But again, it comes down to that maybe by association or what, like, if that flinching is there, too much flinching is there, then how to, and you know that stone, we are stone also, because the knowledge is there, that all this is there, and so flinching, stone, everything, so how to practically, I mean, come out of that situation?
Practice in good association. It just means that you have to, you know, like, first you have to be conscious and acknowledge, okay, Krishna sent this test. He wants me to do something. He wants me to learn something. Okay, so the first thing I do is I take shelter and I ask him, I'm open to it. I want to cooperate with you. You know what a fool I am. I'm not going to be able to make sense of it. So what am I supposed to learn from this? And it can be in very, very small things. I'll tell you a funny little example of it. But once you become attuned to working like this, it is a very wonderful way to work. You feel Krishna breathing in your life. The other day, I asked Sitarani to make up a handout. Had a whole stack of quotes that I wanted on the page. When I got the handout proof, half the quotes are missing. Now, I could respond by that by saying, my God, she's forgotten to put the quotes. Oh, my God, she's incompetent. I've got to go on a whole train like that. I listened to Prabhupada. I said to Mahaprabhu, what am I supposed to learn from this? My dear, you're supposed to learn from this. You don't want all these quotes on the same page, because they're two different topics. One is the
Dasamala.
The Dasamala, and the other is the essence. Right? So if I'm in controller mode and I know what I want, Sitarani, for God's sake, put all these quotes on this page. That's what I want you to do. You're supposed to do that, right? Such a tiny thing. But at every step of the way, we're doing it that way. Question. We're not the plan maker. We're not the doer. I can't lift my hand if Krishna doesn't allow me. If there's not 33 million demigods to help, this body doesn't function. Catching me? So that inertia is there. You know, we're stuck in the mud. And inertia is there. So then you take good association. You may not have that in your area. That's a misfortune you may have. But there's one beauty of Kali Yuga is you have so much access online. You're feeling a bit flat one time, then you tune into Dhruva Maharaj's parikrams, Vrindavan parikrams. Or you tune into, you know, there's so many things happening on screen. Or you can tune into, you know, London, or you can tune into, you know, all over the place. New York Arena. Sing along with the New York Arena. So many things you can do. But stay in good association and be conscious that it's not, you know, why me? Why this happened to me? I'm trying so hard to chant my rounds. I'm trying so hard to be Krishna. Why, Krishna? Why are you doing this? Why? It's like a kid throwing a tantrum. Kids don't know what they're doing. That's acceptable for a kid, but it's not acceptable for you. Why? But you want to ask that question, but you don't want to ask it in a challenging way. You really want to know why.
You
see, because when you're changing from stone to fish, what you're talking about is a matter of sensitivity. You're refining. You're refining your consciousness, refining your speech, refining your emotions. Everything is being refined. You know, there are no brutes in Golok. Brutes. You know, so everything here, we have to see that this is training ground. If we are serious devotees, we're in training. We have to learn to hear what Krishna wants us to learn at any particular time.
But does that happen, Mataji, like that sometimes you are like trying to ask, yes, Krishna, whatever you're trying to convey.
Uh-huh.
But you don't get the answers, like you're trying hard. And
But then you have to be, you know, then we get into the nitty gritty. If you really want to hear Krishna, you really want to cooperate with Krishna, then we start with a very essential verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which I am always emphasizing. It all starts with the tongue. You see, Krishna said, I mean, Prabhupada, he says it in such an amazing way. He says, devotional service doesn't start with the hands or the legs. Or the mouth, you know, it doesn't start with the eyes or the ears. Devotional service starts with the mouth. The door to prem is the mouth. Hare Krishna, we don't chant Hare Krishna with our toes. We chant with the mouth. So then, an essential aspect, if you want to fine tune, first thing you have to fine tune is your mouth. You don't have two mouths. You don't have one mouth to eat all sorts of bhog and talk all sorts of nonsense, and another mouth that you chant Sudanam and, you know, like, speak Krishna Katha. You have one mouth. Krishna has arranged it that way. You have to make a conscious decision. How am I going to use my mouth? Krishna Das Kaviraj tells us in Chaitanya Charitamrita that a devotee who is actually attached to Krishna will not eat anything not offered to Krishna. If you have factual attachment to Krishna, you will not eat anything that's not offered to Krishna. And if you have a relationship with Nam, how is it that you're going to use your mouth to blaspheme sadhus, to belittle Guru's instruction, to preach against the teachings of your founder Acharya? If you have a relationship with Nam, you're going to do any of that? You get you? So we're talking serious. When you're talking stone to fish, you're talking majjam majjam. Kanistas are only concerned, kanista majjam also, only concerned with externals. The external, I mean, that's okay. That's good, the externals should be in place. But more important is the heart in place? You'll see, majjam majjam and kanista, they both go to the morning program. They both do the same things. So externally they're the same, right? But internally they're not the same. The level of awareness, the level of consciousness, the level of realization of what they're doing is very different. So, you know, the onus is on us. We have to make a decision. I don't want to waste this human form of life. I don't know what my next form will be if I do. I don't want to waste it. No? So we can't stay in complacency mode. You know, wishy-washy medium. Okay? So Sanatana Goswami, by his experience in these first 100 verses or so, he's showing us that to really take full advantage of the teachings that we're going to hear from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have to be materially exhausted. We have to be convinced that this place is miserable and is temporary. I'm not saying we become pessimistic, I'm saying we become realistic. We also have to be convinced of our own position. We can do this study academically or we can do it for transformation. I'm not into academic study. I'm into transformation. So if you want, you have to realize, you know, you have to be materially exhausted. This place, this pits. No general mistake. Okay, and we have to be convinced of our position. I'm suffering, I'm living in a madhouse. It's a madhouse. Everybody thinks they're something they're not. Isn't that called a madhouse? Yeah. It's a madhouse. I'm suffering and I'm living in a madhouse. I don't really know why I'm suffering. I don't really know where I'm going. I don't even really know who I am. If we can consciously, firmly say that, then we are ready to hear Maria 20 from the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he'll answer the question, who am I? Why are these threefold miseries always giving me trouble? Okay, so who's going to join us for our... who wants to accompany Sanatana Goswami in his adventures? Okay, we're all going to join him in his journey. Okay, so let's start with the first verse. Let me offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose unlimited wonderful opulences. By his mercy, even a person born as the lowest of men can spread the science of devotional service. So straight away we're getting the picture. Mahaprabhu, me, mercy flows down, I'm in a very good position. Yes? Mahaprabhu, all opulences. Huh? Unlimited wonderful opulences. Lowest of men, those opulences flow down. Wonderful. Very inspiring stuff. Good. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Nityananda Prabhu, all glories to Vedacharya, and all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. While Sanatana Goswami was imprisoned in Bengal, a letter arrived from Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur informs us that this letter from Rupa Goswami to Sanatana Goswami is mentioned by the annotator of Advaita Chandrika. Srila Rupa Goswami wrote a note to Sanatana Goswami from Bakla. So Bakla, Bakla Chandradweep, was actually mentioned in Adi 1084 Purport, that that was the residential estate of Komadev, the father of Rupa Goswami. So he's gone back. He's not in jail, he's gone back to his family estate. He had all that money he had to distribute to the Brahmins and the family and everything. So he's doing his work and he's doing it from his father's estate. But he's writing from Sanatana from there, telling him about Mahaprabhu. This note indicated that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming to mature, and it stated, where has the mature party of Yogapati gone? Where has the northern Koshal of Raghupati gone? By reflection, make the mind steady thinking. This universe is not eternal. So interesting that they're wanting to protect, the information of where Mahaprabhu is from those who may get hold of the letter. So he's putting it in cryptic words. When Sanatana Goswami received this note from Rupa Goswami, he became very pleased. He immediately went to the jail superintendent, who was a meat eater, and spoke as follows. Sanatana Goswami told the Mohammedan jail keeper, "Dear sir, you are a saintly person and are very fortunate. You have full knowledge of the revealed scriptures such as the Quran and similar books." Now this is a very interesting statement that he's making here. There's a number of ways we can look at it. One way that we can look at it is that people are locked into their upadis. Mm-hmm. If you don't respect somebody's upadis, they will take offense. Mm-hmm. If I'm a great doctor and nobody recognizes it, I walk into an assembly. The greatest example is Daksha. Mm-hmm. You know, what offense he took because Shiva didn't stand up to welcome him. Such a crazy situation because of this man's hang up about his upadis. You know, but we're the same. We do the same thing. We want our upadis respected. So here, because Sanatana Goswami is, he's a psychologist, he knows, he's been working in government as a minister. He knows diplomacy. So now Rupa Goswami told him to get out of jail and join Mahaprabhu. Do whatever it takes. So and Prabhupada, he has a very interesting way of looking at this. We quite often use the term in Bombay. Devotees come, Prabhupada, they want a bribe. Prabhupada, they won't give us this permit unless there's a bribe. Prabhupada, they want a bribe. What did Prabhupada say? Give the dog a bone. You know, dogs have a taste for bones. So get the dog a bone. I mean, don't get judgmental about it. Don't, make any big scene about it. But if that's the way it's working here at this particular point in time, it's the only way we're going to get the work done. Give the dog a bone. If one releases a conditioned soul or imprisoned person according to religious principles, he himself is also released from material bondage by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Let's read Prabhupada's booklet. It appears from this statement that Sanatana Goswami was formerly a minister of the Nawad, was trying to cheat the Mohammedan superintendent. a jail superintendent had only an ordinary education or practically no education, and he was certainly not supposed to be very advanced in spiritual knowledge. However, just to satisfy him, Sanatana Goswami praised him as a very learned scholar of the scriptures. The jailkeeper could not deny that he was a learned scholar, because when one is elevated to an elevated, exalted position, one thinks himself fit for that position.
Amazing.
It is really an amazing statement. Instead of thinking, by mercy of Guru and Gauranga, I have an opportunity to do this service. No, I am fit for this. Everybody should worship me. It's so ridiculous. Everything is by mercy of Guru and Gauranga. We are so insignificant. Okay, so he's thinking. He's caught him. Okay, I'm elevated. No, I'm great. So, Sanatana Goswami was correctly explaining the effects of spiritual activity, and the jailkeeper connected his statement with his release from the jail. There are innumerable conditioned souls rotting in the material world, imprisoned by Maya under the spell of sense gratification. The living entity is so entranced by the spell of Maya that in conditioned life even a pig feels satisfied. There are two kinds of covering powers exhibited by Maya. One is called Prakshetatmika and the other is called Aranatmika. The one is determined to get out of material bondage, the Prakshetatmika Shakti, the spell of diversion, empowers one to remain in conditioned life fully satisfied by sense gratification. Take note of that. That is a very important point. You make a decision. I want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. I want to get serious. What is Maya's reaction? The spell of diversion impels one to remain in conditioned life fully satisfied with sense gratification. So don't be surprised if when you make this kind of resolution, all of a sudden there's an inheritance from some great aunt that you never knew. Oh, you know, there's a, you know, some work comes to the office that you weren't expecting. So, you know, Krishna was sort of like, you know, give me a little bit of
crumbs.
Crumbs. You know, and you'll be satisfied with it. You'll be satisfied with it. So that's one way that he rolled on, that she rolled. By virtue. And due to the other power of an anatmika, a conditioned soul feels satisfied even if it is running in the body of a pig or a worm in straw. You're satisfied in your position. That's fine. Yeah. Not so bad. The human life is not so bad. It's okay. To release a conditioned soul from material bondage is very difficult because the spell of Maya is so strong. Even when the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself descends to deliver conditioned souls, asking them to surrender unto him, the conditioned souls do not agree to the Lord's proposals. Therefore, Sri Sanatana Goswami said, somehow or other, one helps another gain release from the bondage of Maya. He is certainly recognized immediately by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:69, the greatest service one can render the Lord is try to infuse devotional service into the heart of the conditioned soul, so that the conditioned soul may be released from conditional life. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, the Vaishnava is recognized by his preaching work. That is, by convincing the conditioned soul about his eternal position, which is explained here as Nijadharma. It is a living entity's eternal position to serve the Lord. Therefore, to help one get released from material bondage is to awaken one to the dormant understanding that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. Jiva Shubha Hai Krishna Nityadas. This will be further explained by the Lord himself, the Sanatana Goswami. Now, one very important point this we should take from this is that we should be in association which is supportive. We should be in association which means that we're protected from these illusory forces. It's so important to have a friend in Krishna consciousness who you trust more than your mind. So important. Of course, you don't have to choose that friend whimsically. It's so important that somebody is there that you trust more than your mind, because the mind can take you for a spin. So many times, we go into a circumstance where we hear from one speaker, come out completely bewildered. Unless we can go to somebody and say, this guy just said that, what do you think about that? So important. Oh, you're having some difficulty in your service. Somebody you can ring up and say, this is happening, I don't know what to make of this. You really need. It's not that, you know, one of our biggest troubles at the moment as a society is that we think too vertically. We have disciple, sadhu, guru, like that. But the Majjhima culture respects that. The Majjhima culture is like this. It's a culture of friendship. So we have a circle of friends, always there's a circle of friends there that we can, you know, we can take shelter of. Something comes up, just ring them up. I'm going nuts. My kids have kept me awake all night. I don't know what to do about this. So, And just by being able to talk to somebody about what you're going through, it helps so much. If that person is qualified to talk. You don't want to talk to somebody who's going to just spin it more into a problem for you. You want to talk to somebody who's going to help you get out of that problem. So this is an important thing that we can learn from this. That we want to help remind each other that we are Krishna's servants. Mm-hmm. It should be that kind of sangha, that we're reminding each other. We're servants of Guru Rama. What would a servant of Guru Rama do in this circumstance? I don't like that. Any questions before you go? Sanatana Goswami continued, previously I've done much for you. Now I'm in difficulty. Please return my goodwill by releasing me. Here are 5,000 gold coins. Please accept them. By releasing me, you'll receive the results of pious activities and gain material profit as well. Thus you will profit in two ways simultaneously. Now it's interesting that earlier Krishnadas Kaviraj is telling us that he's talking to a meat eater. So a meat eater, you know, if you're a meat eater, you don't have refined sentiments. So he's mentioning, I've done so much for you. Now I'm in difficulty. I'm depending on you. But the very next sentence, here's what it doesn't go. Because I know you're not going to help me out of any sense of goodwill. Right? There's got to be something in it for you. You see, the culture is coming. Sanatana Goswami knows what he's dealing with. It's not going to be, I did something for you, so maybe you can do something. No, no, here's 5,000 gold coins. You know, and you'll get the pious results, so, you know, cheating religion. You get the pious results also. You know, like, so do a good deal. Yeah. Interesting how he's speaking. In this way, Sanatana Goswami convinced the jailkeeper, who replied, please hear me, my dear sir. I'm willing to release you, but I'm afraid of the government. Sanat replied, there is no danger. The Nawab has gone to the south. If he returns, tell him that Sanat went to pass storm near the bank of the Ganges, and that as soon as he saw the Ganges, he jumped in. Tell him I looked for him for a long time, but I could not find any trace of him. He jumped in with his shackles, and therefore he was drowned and washed away by the waves. There is no reason for you to be afraid. They shall not remain in this country. They shall become a mendicant. Go to the Holy Land of Mecca. He's just tuning into where the guy's at. You know. So Goswami could see that the mind of the meat eater was still not satisfied. He's attracted, but still not satisfied. He then stacked 7,000 gold coins before him. When the meat eater, you see, it's interesting how the language changes. When we began, we were talking about the jailkeeper. Now we're getting into the dynamics of the relationship and how the person's reacting. showing where his heart's at, where his mind's at. We're being reminded, this one's a meat eater. This is the consciousness, the reality of meat eater. When the meat eater saw the coins, he was attracted to them. He then agreed, and that night he cut Sanatana's shackles and let him cross the Ganges. In this way, Sanatana Goswami was released. However, he was not able to walk along the path of the fortress. Walking day and night, he finally arrived at the hilly tract of land known as Patada. After reaching Patada, he met a landholder and submissively requested him to get him across that hilly tract of land. A man who was expert in palmistry was at that time staying with the landlord. Knowing about Sanatana, he whispered the following in the landlord's ear. The palmist said, "This man, Sanatana, possesses 8 gold coins." Hearing this, the landlord was very pleased and spoke the following to Sanatana Goswami. The landlord said, "I shall get you across that hilly tract at night with my own men. Now just take your lunch and cook for yourself." Saying this, the landlord offered Sanatana grains to cook. Sanatana then went to the riverside and took his bath. Because Sanatana had been fasting for 2 days, he cooked the food and ate it. However, having formerly been a minister of the Nawab, he began to contemplate the situation. As a former minister of the Nawab, Sanatana could certainly understand diplomacy. He therefore thought, "Why is this landlord offering me such respect? This one's not caught up in his upadis. This one's just seeing the reality as it is. And because he's seeing the reality as it is, he's in a good position to assess it and what he should do with it. He's not saying, well, you know, yes, that's the right thing, he should respect me, I'm a well established, I'm a wealthy person, this and that. And then, no, wait a minute. Why is he doing like this?" Sharp, very sharp. He therefore thought, "Why is this landlord offering me such respect?" Thinking in this way, he questioned his servant, whose name was Ishan. Sanatana asked his servant, "Ishan, I think you have some valuable things with you." Ishan replied, "Yes, I have 7 gold coins." Now, interesting here, what I want to point out is the culture. Sanatana Goswami is talking as if he has been very badly contaminated by the Muslims. But the fact is that he took up that post because he was told that if he and his brother didn't take up that post, then the Brahmins and Vaishnavas would be very badly treated. So as an act of service to the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins, he took up that post. And in Raman Kelly, which was the base, they created a whole group of Vrindavan. Their preoccupation was Vrindavan. Sanatana, from his childhood, was absorbed in Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna. So, you know, he's presenting himself in some way. But we have to understand, just by watching it, it's one thing how a person presents himself, it's another right thing how he speaks. From his speech we can understand how very, very cultured he is. You say the sentence, "Ishan, I think you have some valuable things with you. What are you doing? What have you got with you?" You know, it's the way he's speaking. It's a cultured, soft, gentle way of speaking. There's no harshness, there's no accusative mood to it. And initially he feels comfortable to just be honest. If you're assertive and abusive in asking somebody a question, they're not going to feel comfortable to reply to you, honestly. They're going to answer in a way to protect themselves. This is the way it goes. Hearing this, Sanatana Goswami chastised his servant, saying, "Why have you brought this death knell with you?" So he's not he's not chastising him by calling him bad names. It's just pointing out the reality. Look what you've done. By bringing this money with you, you brought a death knell. He's just pointing out the reality to the man. Thereupon, Sanatana Goswami took the 7 gold coins in his hands and went to the landlord. Holding the gold coins before him, he spoke as follows. I have these 7 gold coins with me. Please accept them, and from a religious point of view, please get me across that hilly tract of land. What would you have done, Mother Dhamana?
In this position?
Yeah. The servant, you find out your servant's got 7 gold coins. What would you do? What would you do, hun?
Take it, keep it in my pocket, you know, throw the servant out, then try to, you know, escape.
Okay. You see the difference between the way Sanatana Goswami, you know, with a Vaishnav, one very strong characteristic of a realized Vaishnav is that they have no sense of competitive sense gratification. This world is hell because there's a competition for sense gratification. But with a Vaishnav, you take it. I'm not attached to it. You take it. The sense of competition. Even if it's not there spiritually. It's not there spiritually. You see it in the Kanista. Elbow his way up to the front at Mangalati because I want darshan of Radhasham. And you'll see, you know, a great soul at the back, just very comfortable, standing at the back taking the same darshan. You see, there's a refinement of consciousness, an awareness of our actual position. I'm not the center of the universe. Krishna is. I'm nowhere near the center of the universe. There are zillions of Nityasiddhar associates of Mahaprabhu, of Radhasham, so much closer than I am. I'm happy in my position. And actually the beauty of being servant of the servant of the servant of the servant is that you get such an amazing perspective of who that person is in the center. If you're right there, you're right up front, then what do you see? You only see what you see. But if you're 3 down the line, then you get 3 other visions of who that person is. Your ambition is so much more enriched.
Yeah. You get 3?
You get 3 other persons' understanding of who that person is. So it's such a so much more enriched understanding of who the person is. Yeah? So there's no sense of, you know, he's not going to do it the way we would do it. You know, throw the servant out, take the money, find my own escape route. Can't be bothered with that. Let's not waste time. Let's do expediency. I have these 7 gold coins with me. Please accept them, and from a religious point of view, please get me across that hilly tract of land. I'm a prisoner of the government and I cannot go along the way of the ramparts. It would be very pious of you to take this money and kindly get me across this hilly tract of land. Smiling, the landlord said, before you offered them, I already knew that there were 8 gold coins in your servant's possession. On this very night, I would have killed you and taken your coins. It is very good that you have voluntarily offered them to me. I am now relieved in such a simple activity. Just by not having that competitive mood. I am very satisfied with your behavior. I shall not accept these gold coins, but I shall get you across that hilly tract of land simply to perform a pious activity. Sanatana Goswami replied, if you do not accept these coins, someone else will kill me for them. It is better that you save me from the danger by accepting the coins. Conscious. After the settlement was made, the landlord gave Sanatana Goswami 4 watchmen to accompany him. They went through the forest path for the whole night and then brought him over the hilly tract of land. After crossing the hills, Sanatana Goswami told his servant, Ishan, I think you should have some balance left in the gold coins. You see how cultured he is. You liar? Why did you lie to me? That harshness, that anger of speech is not there. Isham, I think you still have some balance of a gold class. Isn't it? Interesting. Isham replied, I still have one gold coin in my possession. Sanat Goswami then said, take the coin and return to your home. Now one thing that we should be aware of here is that he's not belittling him. What he's doing is he's seeing by the man's behavior that he's not yet ready for the life of renunciation. He is too dependent on material conditions. So he doesn't want to discredit the life of renunciation that he's going to take on himself. He doesn't want that, to discredit that by having someone in consciousness in his association who's not of that caliber. And he also doesn't want to do a disservice to that person. If someone's not ready for renunciation, you don't force it on them. It has to evolve at heart level. Anything that's externally imposed doesn't have a long life value. So it's very beautiful what you're saying. Still have one gold coin in my possession. So that goes from there. So take the gold, take the coin and return to your home. Okay, we'll stop there and go on in the next session. Hare Krishna. Hare
Thank you.